Welcome to the Blackout Show, presented by The Guillen Grid, a show about the Chicago White Sox baseball, the good, the bad, the ugly. We'll debate what's working and what's not on the south side of Chicago. It's old school versus new school baseball. And most importantly, we're keeping all the receipts.
What is up, everybody? It's Jay and myself tonight. My man, it is opening day. It is here tomorrow, as of tomorrow.
But we finally made it.
Yes, tonight we got Yankees and Giants as we wait, as we go to bed, excited just to face the NL Central champs, Milwaukee Brewers tomorrow away. Justin, how excited are we for that we're finally here and the 26th season has begun?
I've been waiting all year, Gonzo. Like, Caleb Williams put on the show for me last winter, and then fantasy baseball started kicking up about, you know, February, and then, oh my God, Gonzo, we're walking into a Murakami-type situation along with the ascension of Colson Montgomery. I'm excited for opening night. Don't get me wrong. I got Aaron Judge, Rafael Devers, you know, guys playing tonight on a Wednesday, but it's all about Thursday. It's all about us heading up to Milwaukee and kicking our calendar off, Gonzo. Like, you ask me how excited I am? This is the Blackout Show. It's White Sox time, baby. Like, tomorrow is like Christmas morning. And it's been like that my entire life, Gonzo. What do you want me to say? 12 out of 10? How excited are you, Jay? It's opening day, literally. That's how excited I am. You know the answer to that question. I'm waking up to White Sox baseball, meaningful baseball. It counts. 11 out of 10, 12 out of 10, 13 out of 10. What answer do you want, Gonzo? It's the blackout. I'm excited.
I can't believe that we are number four for opening days on the blackout. So joining us. And
you're getting old.
Not to mention our last episode was our 75th episode. And right now we are four seasons in, episode 76 tonight. With us is a new guest of the Blackout, and one that's going to feel the momentum with us. He is a OG of the 108. Everybody, please welcome one of our favorites of the 108, Mr. Chorizzi. Chorizzi, we're going to give you a photo like Beef did to me a couple weeks ago. So
yes,
here we are.
Wow.
Take it away, Jay.
Man, so basically, right, we brought Chorizzi on tonight. It's Wednesday. It's the night before opening day. Chorizzi, you've been around a long time. You've seen this team a lot more than me and Gonzo. How do you feel about opening day? And welcome to the Blackout.
Well, thank you for the welcome. I'm always excited for opening day, man. I mean, it's a new season no matter what. And like, I love baseball, man. There's nothing better than sitting in the park watching baseball. And we're just days away from that, from actually getting into the park. We're hours away from actually seeing our team play live. So I'm over the moon, man. I'm excited as hell. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I think this team has a lot of interesting things about it. I don't for a second think that, like, man, this is a world beating team. But I do think there's a lot of interesting things on this team. And I think there's a lot of interesting things right beneath this team to see, like, what. And I think we're going to see a lot more guys than we're kind of initially thinking, you know, just looking at the roster. And so, like, I'm excited for all of that. That's like all of that is just all I ever want to think about. So it's exciting. We're right on the doorstep of that.
Yeah,
bro. Think about this. Hold on, wait, because Gonzo, you know what? And you fell straight for my trap card. You and Gonzo, because you tried to trade my catcher Edgar Cuero, right? We're coming up on the precipice of, you want to talk about a new situation, a new regime, the youth. Take a look at this roster right here. Like, how many guys are the elder statesmen, the official OG White Sox? Like, is there any names that you're familiar with going forward? Let's just say the last 5 years of Sox, you've had these opening days from Yermin Mercedes, Tim Anderson, Jose Abreu. How many of those type of guys are on this roster right now? Like,
I mean, the only guy that's been here at all for a while really is Benintendi, right? I mean, yeah. and Sosa to some degree, because we kept seeing a little bit of Sosa. They burned through his options as quickly as possible, so that it's very painful to have him on the roster. I mean, there's not anybody who's been around. These are all new guys. But I got to talk about that Edgar Cuero thing. I wasn't trying to trade Edgar Cuero. Yeah.
You hurt my feelings. You literally hurt my feelings on the internet.
I'm getting Reese McGuire, and I said they can't possibly be looking to roster three catchers this year. They can't possibly be thinking to do that. So they must be trading someone. And it only makes sense, if you're not going to roster three catchers, to trade Cuero. Because if you're trading Lee, you didn't really eliminate that problem. You still have three catchers, right? Because Teal's back not too long from now. So I was like, Cuero makes the most sense to be traded out of this if they're doing a logical thing like having two catchers for this season. But it looks like they want a roster. They love flexibility, so they many DHs as possible. So it's well done.
So before we get
go ahead, Gonzo.
Before we get into, you know, our 26-man breakdown that we're going to do shortly here, I want to get more focus on the 108 brand before we deep dive here. And obviously, you know, we are in the thick of the tournament right now, almost at the end. I want to talk more so a little bit about the tournament of this season. And then I do have a fan question from last week we didn't answer that I think connects to your guys' brand, and I'm going to present it so all of us can answer it. But first, tournaments. The only thing I got against the tournament from this year was this last round. And I maybe, you know, I know you guys are just playing around with the group thing like in the later rounds. But I was kind of hoping for the flip of what you guys did, the opposite of, instead of feeding out the loser first, I want to get that first seed out, you know, and then decide between those next two who would move forward.
Okay, like whoever wins advances and waits till later, yeah, and then the rest of them probably, the rest of them fight for it.
For me, at least, maybe I'm just a minority here, but I think that would have changed my voting of those two versus the three of them all together, you know, knocking out the lower end first. If you knocked that my first option out of the way first, that they advance, and then I have to decide between the next two, that would have, for me, changed a whole grand scheme of those options for that next round. I'm not sure if Justin felt the same way, but what you got?
So, I just want to say another piece of bread on this sandwich, Trodice. I've been in the tournament a couple times. I don't really put content out there like that. Like, I'll say vote for whoever, you know what I'm saying? Just being a part of the tournament is pretty decent for me. Like, I enjoy being a part of that situation in White Sox Twitter, because it's great. That's how I, you know, found White Sox Twitter, with King Mac, the 108 tournament. Like, that's the foundation of being on the fucking internet that Elon has purchased. But the only thing, Gonzo, that I would say is this tournament is built on the amount of fucking White Sox Twitter content you could fucking put together. It's a fucking avalanche. There's people that have, like, the only reason we're talking about these contestants on the West Coast, like away from Chicago, is because they've been fucking flooding the shit with the content on the internet, right? it's all about projection. Like, how much of your personality, your fucking alliances, your alliances on White Sox Twitter, if you're a simp or a gimp, what the fuck is going on? Who are you supporting? That's what the tournament is built for. You know what I'm saying? And like, it's put in a great place to where we don't really care about the fucking NCAA basketball. Like, the Bulls are tanking. Like, what do we got to look forward to that's not Chicago Bears football? The Blackhawks really aren't, I'm not going to say not relevant, but they're not competitive the way we've seen it right. The last 7 years. Like, they're in a different era. The White Sox Twitter tournament is a great way to fill the fucking void. It's been filling the void for a few years, Gonzo. And that's why, like, Beefloaf putting the trifecta, three people against each other. Like, it's like the Thunderdome in Mad Max. You know what I'm saying? Like, you get in these situations to where it's like a triple threat match. And it's great because there's a lot of people that want to be involved with the tournament. Like, Chorisi, you've seen a lot of people that came and enjoyed it this year more than most.
Yeah, and I think the three-way matchups early helped to really kind of mix it up a little bit more, because you saw some people get through that normally wouldn't get through because you'd put them against like some top seed and they wouldn't sneak through. So it was good to see some of those people, and those people the second day are putting through like really good content because they're excited. And then with the four-way matchups, Gonda, like, I think I like your idea, but we gotta milk as much content out of the top people as possible. So we need them through in, you know, three days in a row. So that's kind of, I think the only other side to that.
Ken got murdered on a Monday. You know what I'm saying? It was like a Midwest scary movie. And he was still involved with the fucking tournament, like endorsing people. Like, Ken W.O., he's basically the evil mad boss in every fucking video game. Like, he's literally fucking transformed himself into one of the bad guys.
He's also like he's the source of Beefloaf's biggest mistake ever in the tournament. So one year Beefloaf put together what he called the Ken W.O. gauntlet. And there was no bracket. It was Ken, and he just had to go through a different person each round, right? And so it was just like this straight gauntlet for Ken. And Ken lost in the first match. So like, we didn't even get any gauntlet. It was just like this weird bracket that, like, you know, I think Pinholes won. Like, it was just like, of all the stuff we were like, oh, this is going to be so cool. And it was like, this is the worst thing, because Ken lost immediately.
Wow. And that, and I feel like that's where Gonzo's going with this fucking team, because he always messages me and inbox me talking about, oh, you like mid. You're not mad at the White Sox. I look at your fantasy team, like, fucking Lindor is your best player. You love mid. Like, Gonzo, I'm not trading my fucking catcher because I got a situation to where I got Kyle Teal, Edgar Cuero, and now Reese McGuire all in the same situation in the same timeline for one position. I got guys that are like, how much is Cuero making annually? Right?
It's, I mean, less than $1 million.
League minimal.
Yeah. So, add that on top of Kyle Teal. How much is he making?
My argument, though, is without Teal right now, with the three that they have, you all have the same hitting profile right now. They're all below average hitters.
I'm not going to say Kyle Teal and Edgar Cuero are below average hitters. I don't want to say
But Cuero is. What I'm saying is the only one out of that group is Teal that is next show.
Love more?
No, I'm telling you what the profile is and what the sample size is that we've seen.
Let's say, though, like, he is below average, below league average, but probably above average for a catcher, because catchers generally stink. So, like, where's he at? Where's he at against? Yeah, where's he at against other catchers in terms of his WRC plus?
He was below average.
He's below average against the league, but like, he's like a 90 something.
No, for catchers, league average for a catcher, he's 94, which is below average.
Can I ask
you? Really? I thought he was 94 for the league.
No.
I want to ask you guys a couple questions about Edgar Cuero.
Yeah.
Do you like how he handles the pitching staff? Like, do you like him receiving the baseball? Yes.
I think the pitcher's like throwing to him. I don't think that he's a great defender. Like, I wouldn't put that.
But can he learn that? He's still young. He has to be acquainted with the arms that are thrown. The White Sox pitching staff have been a revolving door on his, not on his behalf, but the whirlwind that he's caught up in for the Chicago White Sox, he's going to see probably 4 to 7 different arms during a week. There won't be consistency there.
If you look at the defensive metrics with them, all of them are below average, but they all can develop to be average. But what puts Teal out among them, what separates this, is Teal is an above average hitting profile, and he has been, as a rookie, top 10 in the league offensively amongst catchers in the league.
Yeah, and Carroll has to get power into his profile. Unless that comes, that's something, right? But like, if it doesn't, it's not gonna be like as exciting as we're all thinking. But Gonzo, I like your idea because, you know, like when we think about how are we going to improve this team, right? What are the ways that we're gonna improve this team other than just going on a free agency? Some of it's gotta hurt, right? Like you can't just trade all the bad guys you don't like because the other teams don't like them either. Right. Like, so there are going to be things like that where you got to do something that's kind of painful to improve your team. I wonder, though, what the market is for Edgar Carroll. You know, it's one of those things. And it's an interesting thing to talk about because, you know, when we were talking about the Teal extension, Gonzo, you know, like those are the types of things that pique my interest. Right. Like honestly, I wouldn't have gone back and forth with probably most people, but it was like an interesting topic. And I was like, let's get into this, right? Let me understand where he's coming from. And like the Carroll thing is along that line. And you kind of wonder, like, have the Sox kind of had him out there and the return is just not enough, right? Or do they people just go like, oh, you're thinking about trading one of your catchers? Well, let's talk about Teal. And it just always goes that direction. And Carroll's kind of like a second fiddle to that. So I kind of wonder where, like, what could you actually get for Edgar Carroll? Because you have to move some of these guys in those positions where you have some depth, but maybe it's just not there. And maybe it is later in the season when something, right? Like, then you can.
I can't speak. You're kind of cutting out there, Treasy. You cut out there a little bit, but I can't speak for your Treasy on, you know, if you watch the whole episode of me on the Ajus in full, but what I can tell you is with that topic of Teal and Cuero, I went pretty in depth in on it. It was a good discussion.
I watched.
Yeah. And I recommend to everyone, just for the sake of time, go to that episode, watch the full portion. Cause even that segment, I mentioned it where, you know, one of the things that's hard that goes towards Cuero that's hard against him is that barrel rate is such a huge weakness that I don't think he gets there. And that's the thing is I would take full, you know, advantage of where he's at currently with where that value is and strike now before that plummets. But to answer your question, I know I kind of went away on that, but to answer your question, me personally, I don't think you can trade him outright by himself right now. Cause I think you're only going to get probably a bullpen arm. A middle
you'd never do that, right?
So that's why I mentioned in the episode Beef that I would pair him with
right.
I know Vassell got injured, right? But originally during the episode, I threw out Vassell out there because that was a guy that, you know, a year ago he threw 100 plus innings and put his name out there and has a value as because he can go multiple innings as a pen arm, and that's where the MLB is going right now is multiple innings and high leverage situations. But I think that's kind of what you have to do. You might have to pair up Cuero and a Vassell, or maybe you take it up a notch and say, hey, you know what? We're going to do Cuero and Shane Smith. So we're going to blossom that value and get what we can out of
it. Hold on, wait, time out.
I want you to tweet that out. I think people will react rationally to it.
Yeah.
And so, okay, let me ask you. Because we're talking about pairing Cuero up in a trade, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're going to have to use some resources to increase his value. There is no way we could pair Edgar Cuero with Grant Taylor, right? Because he's what? And you guys' opinion. Why can't we use Grant Taylor in an aggressive trade?
I so why? what I think we're only first off, this kind of goes towards what beef with their discussion that they've had. You want to build his value as a, because he hasn't pitched a full season as a closer yet. So when they traded Mason Miller, right, he was already a closer for a year and a half of sample size. And obviously the A's got Varias out of that deal. One of the best shortstop prospects to be dealt within the past several years. But that's the package that you're looking for, because again, we had last week, we had Nate Rasmussen on, and I agree with him. He's calling Grant Taylor Mason Miller light, because he's got right. The stuff. The stuff is there. It's just building that volume and getting that value to there, which I think is absolutely could be there. But that's a piece that I would say Grant Taylor by himself, if you can build that inning load, again, when you're building him, Nate said you want to see if you can convert him over to a starting pitcher before you make that decision. But if you believe that he won't get there,
you got to make that decision early.
Then I would absolutely trade him as soon as he puts that sample size up this season. But that's a piece in itself. That's one of your probably best trade value pieces in this organization at the moment, with what you can get out of that if you get that innings load to get there. So that's I wouldn't combine both Cuero and Taylor together. I would separate it and do Cuero and a different pen arm or starting arm at some point, and then, you know, do those moves separately.
Yeah, I think the Taylor thing's interesting. I would like to understand how they're going to use them this year, because I mean, like, if they're putting him into a eighth inning role or something, you know, like Dominguez is going to get the saves, but if they put him in an eighth inning role, then it's really interesting. If they use him like a, you know, like a multi-inning guy, and that causes them to, because they seem concerned with his arm health and his usage, right? Like, so he's not going to get like a vassal load or anything. If they're using him like two three innings at a time, and then it's sparingly used throughout the year, I don't know that you build it up as much as you're thinking, you know, unless someone believes he's a starter.
So my thing,
but who is that someone? Brian Bannister, Chris Getz? Like,
no, I mean like another team. It has to be another team. I don't think Bannister thinks he's a starter, because I don't think he thinks he could keep his arm healthy as a starter.
So the thing was,
that's why the 100. I just want to say this, Gonzo, not to cut you off.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to say that's why the 100 inning thing is a sham. Because if you're already treating this guy as a reliever, why are you going to put the finish line 100 innings when Mason Miller never had that much mileage on his arm and he's still Mason Miller, healthy? You know what I'm saying?
I'd be shocked if they do 100 innings with Taylor.
Bro, when that tweet came out, when I got that notification, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, you already made the commitment of putting him in the bullpen. Why are you going to put a cap at 100 innings when anybody in that situation won't even do, what, 80% of that? I'm giving him 75 innings.
Yeah.
70 innings seems like a lot.
I know Chris Getz put out there already in his press conference a couple of days ago saying that we're going to try to get him to be a starting pitcher later in the season, which, with what you're alluding to, Treese, we already know he's very, very light on the innings load. Even in through the minors, it was 17 innings. Like, it's going to take a little bit. It's going to take beyond the season to get him to where that philosophy is. So I only see it how Dominguez is going to be starter up till the trade deadline. They trade him. Grant Taylor comes in, he's a closer the rest of the season. That's how I see it to be. Again, maybe they expedite it. I think it would be very alarming to do that switchover this year, because I think you can hurt that arm and injure that arm later in the season and going into the offseason, which you don't want to do. So, again, I would take it really conservative and just allow him to be the closer for this season. But let's move on, because, again, I mentioned it earlier. We have a fan question from last show. I'm going to pop it up on the screen. The fan asked, when I was a teenager, I went to Comiskey Park a couple of times for games. As an adult, I went to a couple of games at the new stadium. I felt very disconnected to what was going on in your opinion or from the fans, old and young. Which stadium makes you feel more connected to the game, players and fans, more while attending a game? Again, I couldn't see the back half of that question, but Terese, I'm a 95 baby, so I don't remember the old Comiskey.
Like you got Alzheimer's or something.
I want you to answer that question first, of, at least the between the two stadiums from the fan experience.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't see, like, I was a young kid too for most of that. I mean, I think I was like 12 or 13 when they moved to the new stadium. But like, I mean, the old stadium felt smaller. I mean, like, I guess it felt a little smaller. Probably was seat wise, it was probably smaller. But like, I don't know that I felt any more or less connected to the game at either one. There are stadiums that I've been to where it's just like, man, I just feel like I'm 8,000 miles from the field. But like, I feel like at Sox Park, like most of the sight lines are pretty good, unless you're like in that weird like center field area where there's like part of the field missing for you. But like, I don't know. I always feel connected to the game. I could imagine though, when you have a really bad team like the White Sox have had, and you go to a game and there's 3,000 people there, that maybe there's not the connection that you remember from like when you were going to an old crowded, more crowded stadium, right? And I don't think that has anything to do so much with the stadium as much as like this team's been bad. And like there's games where you go there and you could probably talk to the pitcher if you speak loud enough.
And I wanted to bring that question into the show because I know earlier in the week we saw the whole Ishbia development with, you know, the Metro Rail yard across from the 78. So with tying that question in, let's just say that, you know, that project does take off, you know, stadium gets put there. What do you, have you already had a DM to Mr. Ishbia for maybe your, you know, becoming a new follower? Did you have a insight on what can enhance the next stadium from another 108 section? So like maybe instead of a foul pole, you put like a fountain in front of your view that you guys have there. Like where are you at?
All I want if with section 108 for whatever new stadium we have, wherever it is, is that they don't make it expensive. Like the beautiful part of 108 is it's cheap, man. Don't gentrify us out of our area, man. Like don't make it expensive. That's all I ask, man. I don't want it. Like if it's behind home plate, I'm gonna be like, man, Justin Ishbia hates us. He knows we ain't getting season tickets back here,
bro. I'm gonna have to DM Justin and say, all right, I want to see the foul pole, DM me. The fountain, the goose. I want all three of that.
I want the goose. I would love the goose back.
I miss the goose. Like, can you imagine the goose being there with Joe Borcher? Like, that'd be sick. That'd be disgusting.
Murakami. Like, it's such a miss. Such a miss.
It's crazy, bro. Like, but at the end of the day, I'm okay with the construction of the rate right now. Like, my best memory as a White Sox fan, I was there. Dylan Cease took the one hitter into the ninth against the Twins. I've been to a lot of White Sox games. That was my favorite because I was absolutely fucking hammered walking a concourse, nervous because Dylan Cease was giving people the seal in that night. He was literally, and Minnesota, don't get me wrong, they were basura, but Luis Arias, like they had a couple of people in that lineup that you shouldn't be no hitting, and Dylan Cease was tiptoeing through what, 8 1/3
before? Yeah, I mean, it was it the second to last batter of the game or the last out? I can't remember. It was way deep in the game because I knew
there was an out when Arias stepped to the plate and he fucking hit the single. And I was like, wow, we was on the verge of history with my 17th margarita. Like that shit, I would never be able to recreate that day at Guaranteed Rate. And I've seen a lot of good White Sox teams in U.S. Cellular Field. I heard about the legend of Comiskey Park. You know what I'm saying? Like, you see through the generations, and you're actually at a generational point, because this piece was just economical. All the K's, like, as far as the individual performance, it'll be hard to be better. And I've seen Polkner get hit in the face with a Carl Pavano fastball and got back up and in two-thirds and hit a fucking bomb, a nuke to the left field bleachers. You can't recreate that shit. And I've seen Dylan Cease just fucking have a masterclass. Like, as White Sox fans, we're lucky because people always talk about how many people was in house to see these games. Like, we could always go back and recollect these isolated events for teams that did not win a championship, but they live on in memory. Like, they're legendary. Three different fucking names of a stadium, Chorisi. You've seen a lot more than me in that fucking building. And they gave us a masterclass in every one of them.
I mean, this is the blackout show. I was at the blackout game. It was an all-time game.
Just really? What was the atmosphere when Jim Thome hit the home run? I got to ask. But you brought it up, so I just got to ask. Like, that was one of my favorite moments in White Sox history. I watched it on the screen. You were there live. What was it like?
So that moment was absolutely incredible, right? I mean, like, the whole stadium exploded. Like, and it was everybody grabbing everybody. I felt really scared for these two Twins fans that were like the only people wearing white in the whole section. I was like, these kids are like 15 years old. They came to watch this game. They're going to die tonight. And so that was awesome. But I think even more so was, like, all of us grew up watching Ken Griffey Jr. and seeing him throw someone out of the plate, even though not the greatest throw I've ever seen. The place was electric for that. And then Jenks closing it out. I mean, like, those gigantic moments in a game where, like, not much happened, right? It was like 1-0 game. It was like, it was all absolutely electric. I have never been in the stadium for something like that before or after.
I'm about to thank that friend for that fan question from last show that we were able to answer. But from my perspective, I thought Brooks Boyer did a good job of advertising and getting the most for the fan experience at the ballpark for the rate. I only feel like it's only going to get better whenever that new stadium is developed. But let's go to the 26-man roster that came out. We talked about the starting rotation last week before it was announced. I'm not sure how much of the bullpen Chorisi that you guys got to when it came out yesterday. The only thing for me was Sean Murphy. I was kind of interested to see him with the options make the 26 right off the bat. But again, that's going to be a very fluid bullpen as the season goes. So I'm not really – nothing there kind of totally shocks me. But I do think that's going to be a very nice bullpen as the season gets going. And I'm excited to see who steps up, if Paez can take some of those innings that, you know, we're going to miss from Vassell. Is there anything from at least the pitching staff that you want to touch up on?
So I think what's interesting to me with the pitching staff is that when I'm looking at it, and I think you guys, you know, probably have as little faith in kind of a few of the guys in there as I do. Like, I don't know what Eric Fetty is at this point of his career.
Come on, dog. Don't do this.
I think there's like, but if you're looking at it from the perspective of either these guys are young or they haven't really ever pitched a ton of innings, like, you're getting 700, maybe 750 innings out of the starters if they all stay healthy. And, like, that's a lot of tax on the bullpen. I don't think they even get to 700 with the guys that are there. I think you're going to see a lot of guys come up. Like, I think you could see, like, 15 different guys make starts if you include the openers that they use. Because, like, I just don't know where the innings come from. Like, if you look across this whole bullpen, like, you know, like, Paez, I like Paez. It's a interesting story. But, like, how many innings can you actually give that guy? Right, it's not going to be anywhere near like what Vassell did, in my opinion, just because, like, he's so young and he's so inexperienced. So, like, I think you're either going to see guys stretched way beyond what they are, or Gonzo, as you mentioned, it's going to be very fluid. A lot of these guys have options. You know, a lot of these guys could be moved up and down. and you might see just a lot of different people in this pitching staff. So I think what we're seeing today, I'm thinking that that's just mark it down, because like there's going to be a Sporkle quiz like after the season, and you're going to be like, oh, I don't remember this guy being on the team at all. So like that's the kind of thing that I see with this pitching staff. It seems like they would have went out and got somebody to be a, in front of Shane Smith if they weren't expecting to just go through a lot of guys this year and figure a lot of things out with these pitchers.
Yeah. No, I really put, again, you kind of said it, but I wasn't really sweating the innings load with the fluidity that I see forthcoming. And I'm actually excited for the fluidity because, again, last year's wave, we didn't see any pitching prospects come up. But, you know, besides the Rule 5 guys, like, we didn't see any top arms come up yet. And we got Hagen Smith, Noah Schultz. I think Tanner McDougal will be the first one up. And I was the one that I really wished he would have been breaking camp, because I thought he was the best arm that they have besides.
It's been a really good story.
Yeah, I thought he could have had a better start than what we saw from Shane Smith a year ago. Stuff-wise, I'm not sure, again, with, you know, the inning side of it, if he would have got there or not. But I'm excited to see when he does get his call, him just take the mound and go get after it. But again, are we going to see Noah Hagen start in the pen, work the way into some starts later in the year? Eventually, we might see Thorpe down the road get some starts at the back end of the season, or Mason Adams as well. I'm interested in those two. Again, a lot of guys get some innings in. So for me, a lot of fluidity. Again, I'm really excited for at least, you know, the top end guys coming up. But to take a look at this list, we talked a lot about the catchers. I'm going to skip over that. Let's get to at least, I'm going to start with the outfielders. I loved what we saw out of Acuna and camp. I'm wondering if he can continue and do the, you know, the regular season at that pace that he was on, because I haven't seen the contact rates out of him like as high as they were. So we knew the speed was there. Again, I'm excited for the contact rates. But again, I know Brooks Baldwin was, they put him on the 15-day, you know, IL. So when he comes back healthy, he'll probably knock out maybe Derek, you know, Hall or Hill and get him out of there. Benintendi, I want to see if possibly they can move him at the deadline. Hayes is another guy that's going to be a platoon guy that is a asset that you're trying to flip. Tristan Peters, I know he's a really defensive guy that we saw in camp.
According to some.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if he's going to be a fourth outfielder, you know, going into this core development. And even the Rays giving up on Pereira.
It doesn't
interested
matter.
To see what they can get out of him.
It Treasy, doesn't matter.
Out of those outfielders, I know that we'll probably see Braden later on in the year. But just from those guys, who are you excited about there?
Well, I think Peters is just got. I mean, Peters is here until Teal's back, right? Or Baldwin, whoever, because he's the only one in the outfield with options. So they're going to send him down as soon as someone comes back. I think Acuna is probably the most interesting out of that group. I mean, I would love it if Pereira just came out of nowhere and it all worked, right? Like everything that he was supposed to be happens and it's great. I'm not totally counting on that. Acuna, though, I like, because I think speed heals a lot of things, right? It covers up a lot of inadequacies. It's also a guy who, even if you have a set infield and outfield, he can kind of play anywhere. And so he's a valuable player from that aspect. So there's a lot of pieces of his game that are helpful. So I think that that's a guy that I want to see. Like, if that guy could just get on base a little bit, like the stolen base numbers will be high. And that's something that you know, helps you in so many ways. So like, I like that. I think other than that, I'm not like too interested in this outfield. I mean, like Benintendi, I think if he can hit for power, like if he all of a sudden starts, you know, going past the 20 number that he's hit in the past couple of years, he gets up to like 25 home runs, then it's interesting. But he's DHing a ton. Like they've said it, and it's like,
yeah,
it's a kind of a weak DH, right? Like so, yeah. There's just the outfield. It came in as chaos. It still looks like chaos. You mentioned Austin Hayes platooning. I would love if that's what happens, but I have a really like big fear that he is going to be like everyday right field guy, and that's not going to be great.
You said, who was that? You said
Austin Hayes. Like yeah. The league has decided that he's a platoon left fielder.
Right.
But I don't know that the White Sox have decided that. So I'm a little scared going into the season of how they're going to use him.
I just think he's like Dominguez, where you're going to try to get, you know, his value to get as high as it could possibly go and flip him. Cause to me, that's just a short term flip.
But you gotta give him the bats and let him accumulate enough stats mm-hmm. to retain that value. That's why
believe me, the first
getting those innings.
The first 3 months, I just see him getting as many at bats as possible.
That worries me though, because like if they're against mm-hmm. right-handers, it's not gonna. That's not a guy you're gonna get to trade.
Yeah, but again, I think that's what you know. That's why you're gonna be platooning Hayes and Pereira out there in right field.
I was going to say that's probably why Tristan Peters is still on the roster, because he's on the opposite side of that platoon. So he doesn't. Right. So Austin Hayes doesn't exhaust those at bats against right-handed pitching, because yeah. you don't want to do that, because then the slash line gets a little bit smudgy.
Yes.
And you lose that value. Hey, I'm not going to lie. That's why I understand why you people want to trade Edgar Quero and get that value. But his profile, he makes enough contact to where I'm okay. Like, he's the Yomer Sanchez of catching, right? He's a good glove. He's going to make enough contact. I'm not saying he's going to slug over 430. In a good year, he might give me 417. But the contact rate, he's not going to strike out a ton. He's going to find his way on base. He can throw behind runners. Like, he has a couple of things that make him a valuable baseball player. I feel like you can extend Teal while having Edgar Quero on the roster because of Edgar Quero's age. He's not 26 or 27. He's still in the infancy of his professional career. You got some time before you make a decision on parting ways with him and retaining Teal, because the end game is Kyle Teal's extension, backup catcher value, whether that's Quero or somebody else. But you want to get some value in that situation. We don't know if we got to cut Edgar Quero before we extend Teal. Both things can happen. Edgar Quero can be on the roster while Kyle Teal gets his extension. The timing of when Kyle Teal gets his extension is when you decide to make a deal on Quero, because Quero is still young. He's not 26, 27. He's not ARB 2 or ARB 3. He's not in a Corey Lee situation. Not yet.
Yeah. So just to wrap up our 26 man, we're going to touch on the infielders real quick. I'll get us started. I'm actually interested to see how they're going to go about the trade deadline, because I can see them not only move, you know, Sosa, but there might be come a point where Chris Getz might get some calls for Miguel Vargas. And when Antonacci comes up to play second base, Chase might have to slide to third base later in the season, you know, get some of it, max out his at-bats for the control on him. Especially when you're going to draft, you know, Rock, you're going to have to probably place Rock at short, and then Bonnemer is going to be coming up. So when that time comes, I know he has to make it, but that's a guy I could see at third base going from there. But again, you're going to see a lot of infield moving coming up here in the not too distant future, coming within the next year or so. Again, I've already talked about power on the Ajuice, so I don't have to touch on him too much. Touch upon him.
Pause
too much,
again. Pause again, guys.
Go ahead. I'll let you guys take away at the infield.
It's funny on the Vargas thing, because you know I'm in the same boat as you. Like, if he's doing really well, you kind of got to think to trade him, because hilariously, he is the old guy in that infield. Like, right. as young as he is, he's like the old guy in there. He's the out of options guy. He's the closest to arbitration. Like, all those things kind of add up, which is kind of funny when you think about Miguel Vargas, because like, he seems so incredibly young, and he is, he's only 26. Right. But like, that's the kind of thing that like, you have to start thinking about, when is this team going to be good again? And like, are you maximizing the value more if you trade him right now? I think he's got a hit, right? Like, so I think the big thing with Vargas this year, and what's going to be really interesting, especially early in the season, is a lot of those doubles that he hit last year, can they become home runs? If those become home runs and he can play a reasonable third base, that is a valuable player, right?
You might package Cuero and Vargas.
I mean, there's a lot of optionality on this roster if you want to get rid of guys.
That'll kill me.
I just don't want any extensions. That's why I keep hearing you guys with the extensions.
We gotta extend Teal, Trodici. I'm sorry.
Here's the problem I have with extensions. Like, the league is set up in a way for the owners to do well. Like, arbitration is set up on behalf of the owners. Extensions were a novel idea like 5, 6, 10 years ago, right? Where not too many people were doing it. Like, I remember like the Longoria extension was like, holy shit, what are they doing? Why are they doing this? But now there's a market for it, and people understand how much they should be giving and what that looks like. And so you're not getting much value out of it. And especially with Teal, you're going to, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to put Chris Getz up against Scott Boras and trying to get value out of something. And so that's where I don't see like a ton of like extra value coming through to it. But I will give you, Gonzo, I know you like extensions. I'm going to throw this at you. If we want to extend somebody, let's do something that no one does. We're picking Rokchalowski. I mean, we know we're picking him. Extend him right away. But don't skip everything, man. Just put him into a major league contract and put him in. I don't know. I'm still wondering why he doesn't go by Daniel Chalowski. That's weird to me that he's using the middle name. But hey, everything else I've heard about him seems pretty good. He's also, I mean, like, we've heard UCLA, he could have left, got the NIL money. Seems like a guy who wants to be in the same place for a long time. Like, 13 years right off the bat. Let's do it.
There's look only at those one other
numbers right there.
It's beautiful.
Look at those. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that, Joe.
And what I said at the end of the Ajus, I'm not a guy that's, again, I made the statement, but I'm going to extend it a little further. I said, I'm not going to trade everybody. And my extension to that is, I'm not going to extend everybody either. Like, I gave the breakdown of your, I think you need to have at least two elite talents, position players.
That's three fingers, Gonzo, you're holding up. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Three. He's getting greedy. He wants the third elite talent. What's wrong with that?
I told Beef, you have maybe one, right? And we haven't drafted him yet.
Okay, the correct
figure. But I'm like, maybe two, because, again, if I see another season of Bottomer going off with that profile, I think you probably have two. And then I said, you know, I need to see two controllable pitching arms of that talent, too. The balloons are going. They're excited. But I did say, you got to fill in the rest with role players, right? I only said extend Teal because that's an important position up the middle of the diamond. And you can do an extension at a reasonable price where that's going to pay off in the long run. Again, I agree with you. I think the next one should be Rock, obviously. But there's only one arm that – or sorry, not one arm. There's one piece of that core that I might hesitate to do before Ruck, and it depends on what he does in his debut year, and that's Braden Montgomery. I want to see how he does in that debut season, because that makes me hesitate. If he is of the caliber that they drafted him in that draft of a two-way player offensively and defensively, again, we got to see what the numbers crunch is of that extension for an outfielder, but –
Well, let's think about that for a second, because that's
super interesting.
That's super interesting to me. And like, I think from my perspective, like, giving him that year and figuring that out is you lose a lot by doing that in terms of the negotiation. So like, rather than do that, I mean, we just went through the outfield. It's horrible. Like, just do it now. Just do it now. Like, who's knocking him out of that position? Even if he's like an average player, like, who do we have? Like, if you look through everything, who do we have that's in the next 5 years going to even knock this guy out of that position?
To be fair, Teresi, to go along with your point, you saw that with the A's because they extended Butler last year, right? The value they got for Butler on that contract.
And Soderstrom.
And Soderstrom, right? But that value is not going to hurt them in the long run. And when, again, I brought up the pay, what the payroll looks like in 28. Not only do those extensions of, let's just say, Teal and Montgomery, you know, on the books, that's going to save you money for your true, the guys that you, those elite franchise type players, that's not going to hurt you in giving them those extensions of $100+ million
well, to rock. If everything goes well, if everything goes well, right? Like you could look at the PCA contract that just happened, right? And if like PCA's boy. Game is heavily built on speed in a lot of aspects, what if he starts losing a step or two? What if something goes wrong? What if the strikeouts are worse than you thought? Like that's expensive in those late years.
Yeah, but even like I know me and you touched on it a little bit in the
298 on base.
When we compared, let's just say the Samuel Basayo contract, right? 6 years from now, that average AV of 15 to 20 million, that's going to be fucking. I want to give you
for a backup catcher. I don't know.
No,
right?
No.
Because Basayo could be that. Like, we don't know what he's going to be. If it goes really well, it's going to work.
What I'm saying is that 15, 20 million AAV in 6 years for a catcher, it puts him in the top 10 right now, but come 6 years from now, you're probably going to be at a 15th ranked area. So even if that doesn't fully pan out, I'm not totally sweating it. Because again,
but if he's the 15th ranked catcher and he's no good, like let's say he never gets the hit tool, never comes through. Eloy Jimenez is way out of the league. Like you're paying that guy $15 million.
Hold on, wait. I just want to say this
again. Great. That's right now. That's the same value Go ahead.
I just want to say this. We just seen this scenario play out with Gary Sanchez. Gary Sanchez was the best thing since sliced bread, right? Now he's a backup catcher. Like, what, 4.5 to 6 years later, he's a backup catcher. We've seen this situation in regards to Victor Martinez. I know Victor Martinez had some prolific years, but they were as just strictly a DH. So how much am I going to pay for Sammy Basayo to get his maximum value as a DH? Because at the end of the day, we got to make a decision on Adley too. Adley Rutschman is a good all-around catcher. Your team is better off with Adley than without, especially when you're second in line. Sammy Basayo profiles as just a fucking left-handed stick. Don't get me wrong. He has good tools as a catcher, but he gets banged up easily. Like we just seen in spring training, he had a couple of scares. I don't want to put him in that situation if I already got Adley in house. Like I got to pay
just him saying by
just a left-handed bat.
At 2028, you have $4 million on the book, right? So if you do this extension the next 2 years, by 2030, your payroll might be just based on those two extensions, you're going to be around maybe $60 million, you know, plus the rest of the roster with minimal with control of around minimal, you know, league level. Like I'm not sweating if they fall off the cliff by then with the payroll that we have on the books, you know, especially if you keep layering your system, because you already have Hodge coming up the ranks as well as a high school prep guy. I'm not sweating a guy that, you know, 15-20 million AAV when, you know, if what Jay is saying, we got another guy coming up layered in the system that has just as high enough potential. But again, we are way in the rabbit hole, but this is the conversation that's worthwhile when we get there.
I love it. And
we were just preluding to it on the Ajus, which was your guys' brands, which I'm glad we had that conversation. Cause it's one that needs to be said and talked about. Cause that's where we want to get to.
I, I think I will touch on one thing there quick, because you said it on that show, and I want to bring it up here because I think it's a great point in terms of the extension is like the message it sends to the team. I think that that's something that like I'm looking at it purely dollars and cents and value and things like that. I think what you said there was like, you're sending a message to the team that like, yes, we're invested in this young core. This is where we're going. And I do like that. I agree there, like giving that kind of message to these guys is good. And like, it shows that like you're doubling down on what you've been saying in the press.
Thank you. Yeah. That was actually the first thing I said. That was my first point, was the culture message that you're creating and sending. And then I went down, you know, what that means, et cetera, et cetera. But I appreciate that, you know, the emphasis there. Let's get to the meat potatoes, the fun of predictions, as we're going to start to wrap this up.
I've been a fucking all night.
Bold predictions. We're going to start with bold. Grant Taylor is your White Sox representative for the All-Star game this year.
I like that.
That's mine. That.
I like that. That's interesting because, it, you know, you could see it. I mean, like, pitcher is a good call. I mean, like, it. We'd have to have someone be pretty electric on the hitting side to get in there. So I do like that call.
I wanted to say Teal, but he's already missing 4 weeks. I think, that, I mean, look, if he gets off the ball hot, right? I mean, yeah, sure, he might be getting some votes, but missing 4 weeks of baseball, that's going to be tough with production-wise, you know, sample-wise for the rest of the league. Go ahead, Treasy.
Bold prediction for me is Miguel Vargas 30 home runs. That's something that I think that would be his coming out party, like his OPS turning
30 bombs.
I mean, the OPS is probably high. I don't know what the on base is because he's hacking if he's gonna 30 home runs. Yeah, it's 800. I mean, with 30 home runs, you got it. Shit, if he's under 800 with 30 home runs, there's a lot of weird different goals.
Pro was under 800 with 30-30. Fucking loser.
Let's
Miguel Vargas better than that?
I mean, I think his on-base game is better in terms of that. So, sure. But I think like I think if Vargas, it's really about like I said earlier, turning the doubles into home runs, and like this is more just me wanting it to happen. There's nothing that I saw like that. I'm just like, oh yeah, he, the power is there now. He's got it. I really want this to happen. So if I'm making a bold prediction, give me Vargas 30 home runs. And I'm giving you guys a treat because on another show I said Benintendi 30 home runs, and let's not. I didn't want to make anyone vomit here.
I'm not gonna lie. When I look at Miguel Vargas, he's in that Alec Bohm tier. Like if he can exceed, like you're talking about 30, I just want 25 because I feel like he's one of those players that can have sub 30 home runs and still have an 800 OPS just because how much he gets to first base. He has a great eye at the plate. His swing selection is elite. Like he had a broken wrist in spring training 2 years ago. He wasn't even swinging a bat and he was still getting on base. Like how do you walk a guy that's, you know, that's not gonna swing? Like, do you need therapy? Like, what's going on? Talk to somebody about that. But Miguel Vargas can get on base at that clip. And I feel like if he has 30 Chorisi, oh my God.
I mean, it'd be great. It'd be amazing.
My bold
Gonzo, pick, we'd trade him. We'd only get 15 of those home runs.
I'll block Gonzo right now if he says trade Miguel. You know what? You people brought it up in the middle of the show. You know, I'm blocking both of you.
I will drive him to Midway and get him on a Southwest flight ASAP.
Speaking of Southwest, I feel like my bold prediction is Murakami hitting 30 bombs. And
let's go.
We're talking about a three outcome guy because I read all these fucking articles and I get all these notifications about Murakami being a three outcome guy. Well, he's in the prime of his life physically. He wants to be the new kid on the block. He's accountable. He's been a part of winning culture. He has accountability as an athlete. Why do I gotta think that Murakami is gonna have some adjustment period? I understand it's a new country, new culture of baseball, but his talent, I've seen it with my own eyes. Murakami is going to give me 30 bombs plus 800 OPS. And there's a contingent of people. I don't know if you're one of those, Chorisi, but they're thinking that Murakami is going to get traded at the deadline and maximize his value. Like, no, he's a superhero. You don't move.
I don't think that they want to make that impression on Japanese players with this first guy that's like really the big star that they're bringing over to say, like, we're just going to ship him off immediately. So I don't think that they're going to try and do that. I don't think that the organization is going to say, this guy's making us money. We're going to stop making money. It doesn't feel like an org that does that. But I think the thing about Murakami that's been interesting to me in everybody talking about him and like, oh, he can't hit high heat. He can't hit velocity. He hasn't really seen it. Like, it's not something that's common in Japan. So to tell me that a guy who was an MVP in that league is going to come over here, he's 25, he's not 35, and well, that he can't adjust to something, like that he can't figure something new out. Like, he seems like he knows how to hit. Like, so I mean, like, he's got a track record of this. I know that's what scared people off from him, but at the same time, it's like to act like he couldn't possibly figure this out. He just turned 26. He's young. He's a young dude.
Yes.
I think it's kind of wild to just assume that he could never figure that out.
But that's where we are as White Sox fans. We think the glass is always half empty. That's why I got so excited with Murakami, because I was here when we got Adam Dunn, right? Like, we've watched Adam Dunn have a track record in the major leagues. I was excited because I thought he was going to hit a billion home runs and we're going to put him on the board. Oh, bro, I loved the Adam Dunn signing. Like,
Jay, what's your bold prediction, Jay?
Yeah,
Murakami, right?
Murakami, 30 bombs, eight and a half OPS. I brought it up. Wow. I said 8.816 when you first asked me. Now I'm doing 8.5. You caught me.
I want you to double down on it. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I'm glad you heard it the second time.
The OPS is going to get higher every time you ask him.
He better not ask me again.
my take on both of y'all's is, I hope Trees It happens, because I've already put it on Twitter earlier on the show account.
Ganged up on me too.
I did on the show account, which I should have done my own, but I said Vargas regression this year. Jay, you said Murakami. I want to see those bombs and trade it away later in the offseason or later in the season.
Man, get the fuck.
We are going, and I know I talked about it on the Ajus too. We had a whole Murakami topic there.
I'm going to press the red button on you, Gonzo.
Now we're going to record predictions. Let's just do a rapid fire here with the next two of record and division predictions. I say 72 and 90. What say you?
I've been on 70 and 92 for a while because I bet over 69 and a half at plus 200. So I really need that 70th win. So I'm going 70 and 92.
How much did you put down for the plus 200?
Just $100. So
okay. I gotta incorporate some of my closing costs and get some more value out of this deal. Jay, what do you got?
We're gonna have to do 73 and 89. Like, you guys always think the glass is half empty. What's the over and under is 69 and a half, 68 and a half. Like,
it's 68, 67.
I think this team can figure out a way to get three extra wins somehow, some way. It's going to happen. Baseball gods, miracles, team, players overachieving. Like, on the internet this morning, people are talking about a Shane Smith regression. Like, how? Where are you going to get that from? He's an experience. He has one more year of experience. Granted, he has some command issues, but he's brand new to the top echelon of this game. Let him, like, pitchers, they don't even need age. I got 42-year-olds doing better than 26-year-olds in the league. Like, Justin Verlander is better than most. Max Scherzer is better than most. Like, let Shane Smith cook. And the fact that people are saying he's going to regress, he's going to have a couple more quality starts. Quality starts equal wins, period. Game over. Like, what if Sean Burke take another step? Like, yeah, he has the stuff.
He has to take another step. Like, that's something he has to get it done this year. Like,
he's already better than
otherwise. So I don't see him in the
established.
Yeah, I don't see him in the rotation if he doesn't take that next step. Next year.
He's also one of the few guys that could strike a guy out too in that rotation too. So like we need him bad. We need him to show up.
It's the command. Like, his next step is getting zoned in with that command.
There's people out there that agree with me. Like, the glass is half full with our Southsiders.
I love it. All right, real quick, record predictions. Not record, division predictions.
Oh boy.
I really think I want to say the Tigers go back and repeat it, but I really think that the Royals getting their arms back healthy, I think the Royals end up taking the division.
Oh, wow. That's a bold prediction. I like that. I like that. I'm going Tigers. I think that, you know, the addition of Framber, bringing back Verlander, he's 600 years old, but he's still doing it. So like, yeah, the Framber pickup I thought was awesome. And Tarik Skubal's just, even though he's the largest trader to the United States since Benedict Arnold, I think you know, he's incredible. So I think that pitching staff, they're gonna figure out how to hit. They were smart enough to go, we're gonna bring McGonagall up right away. We're not gonna mess around. All of that for them.
Yeah.
So I think the Tigers win this division. Can I ask you guys though, like, do you think the Sox finish last? Because I don't feel place for them this year. Like, I'm looking at the Twins and not thinking much about the Twins. I think like it's injuries. Like, it's always injuries with the Twins. And like, if they get a few injuries, I could see them just moving a bunch of people.
That's what, but they need to make the front office needs to make that decision that we are rebuilding. We're not retooling, because they've got Joe Ryan standing right there as an ace that they can give to a contender and get good value back. And that begins that rebuild. Granted, they do have some good outfielders coming up in the system, Emmanuel Rodriguez, et cetera. But they really should just jumpstart that rebuild. And because again, they're not going to compete with the Royals and Tigers for the next 3 years. And the White Sox, we were already on the up trajectory of moving our core and getting it through the system. So it would behoove them to, you know, save the time and effort of whatever they're doing and get to it, make that decision and go for it. But I agree with you, Treasy. I think because of that, they're going to move them at the deadline, and then you're going to see them. We're going to go past them. They're going to be the bottom.
Bad second half. It's a bad second half if he's not there, if Buxton's hurt. You know, like that's. Oof.
I think y'all forgetting one important character, Luke Keyshaw.
Yeah,
he is.
I like Keyshaw.
He's the equalizer, and I hate to say this, but he's Nico Horner with power. He could slug better than Nico Horner. When you got a guy like that could steal 25 to 35 bags on top of slugging 445, you don't know where his numbers could be on top of the type of impact he could have on the day-to-day baseball operation, playing so close to the pitcher's mound at second base. Most of the good guys, like Buxton, plays 200 to 370 feet away from the pitcher's mound in center field. He doesn't really have an effect on the intricacies of baseball, throwing behind runners, turning double plays, stuff like that. Luke Keyshaw is right there, and you're putting a Mike Trout type talent. I'm gonna say this on the blackout. Oh. I'm sick to my fucking stomach because he doesn't play for the White Sox. But Luke Keyshaw is an Avenger.
Like, I think I think with with the healthy season, he could be top five in the league.
Yes. He is definitely a problem.
But again, I still think they should rebuild to get more and do it the right way. To give, Emmanuel Rodriguez and Keyshaw, Those are two position players that they have that I really like. But even some arms that they got, one of my favorite lefties in their system and their minors, Desan Hill. You can look him up on your own time. Him and Johnny King. Him and Johnny King in Toronto. Those are some of my, you know, not Sox players, but some of my left-handed, you know, pitchers around the league that I'm keeping a tab on. Because those are guys that I would like to get a hold of if I can get a trade with them. But again, I agree with what you're saying, Treasy. Jay, what's your division prediction?
I got the Royals winning division. There's no team in our division in the Central that could put together a duo like Vinny Pascantino and Bobby Witt. And you got the supporting cast of Michael Garcia. So, I mean, that three-headed
monster, right?
Yeah, and Cags, who, I mean, everybody gave up on. Everybody gave up on him, but in 500 at-bats, that's 20 to 25 home runs, 15 stolen bases, at least 70 RBIs. Now, granted, you're going to have to live with the strikeouts because he can touch a lot of pitches outside of the strike zone to where he's going to put a pass on him, whether he hit him or not. But that's a good athlete in your right field that has pop. Like, he's going to slug 440 regardless of on base, right? I feel like the Royals played the best brand of baseball and they have the best talent. The Tigers don't create enough runs. When your best hitters are Torkelson and Riley Green, Riley Green just struck out 200 times. He had 34 bombs and only an 814 OPS, right? So the slug is going to be there. He gets on base enough, but he's given away so many fucking at-bats to where Torkelson got to be a superhero just to be valuable. Like, labor's good, but after that, what? Dingler? Like, Wincell Perez? Like, you're going to put so much fucking pressure on Kevin McConnell to the fact to where the whole offense is going to be moving in silence. Like, a lot of fucking 1-3 innings.
Like, his protection is going to be Riley Green, and Riley Green's going to have to be consistent and not strike out as much.
Happen. He's already being taken out of the defensive equation. Riley Green came up as a center fielder, but the fact that he can't do that competently, they moved him to left. Then what's the next option? You already got Kerry Carpenter that got a DH. You're going to have to DH Riley Green and Kerry Carpenter. That's a fucking logjam right there. Like, that's a problem right there. Your rotation is 1,000 years old.
Yeah. So, Treasy, I think the Tigers, I think
they're
going to be.
Where are you going to go for plan B? Like, the Tigers, they're not making the playoffs. My AL Central, Gonzo, to wrap this shit up like a Christmas gift.
Yeah.
I got the Royals winning the division, and I got the Tribe getting a wild card. And that's.
Wow.
That's it. That's it.
I don't have a second.
That's surprising, the Guardians, that in the playoffs.
I don't have a second wild card in the Central. Between the West and the East right now, I don't think it's going to be two out of the Central.
It's only one team making the playoffs out of the West. Only one.
I think some teams can surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, and they're in the Central.
I think both the Houston and the A's. I think the A's are going to surprise a lot of people this year.
Get the fuck!
I do.
They got one fucking starting pitcher, Gonzo. You're going to raise my blood pressure.
That's okay. I do it normally.
Wait till they trade for Joe Ryan. Then they're in shape.
Exactly. Joe Boyle.
I'm going to say this, Treasy. It's really hard to repeat, you know, as a division champ in this division. So for that reason, that's why I picked Kansas City, but I think they'll be in the mix all the way till the end.
I think it's going to be a good division race for sure.
Yeah. Let's move on to the schedule. Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, Milwaukee. This will be rapid fire as we go series by series here. I think we're going to get swept in Milwaukee.
Come on, dog.
Yeah, Mizorowski is going to have a day versus us tomorrow. I think Shane Smith will be fine. I know we saw a little, you know, a lot of the fan base was scared over some spring training outings that he had recently, but I'm not too worried about that. Going to, what's that Saturday matchup, If I remember, it was, yeah, Chad Patrick and Sean Burke. We touch upon Burke. I don't think that this is a matchup for him to find that command. And for that reason, I think Patrick's going to have a pretty solid outing. And then wrap it up on Sunday. It is, yeah, the newly acquired Brandon Sprout versus Arden Kay. Again, Kay was another one that, you know, didn't have his best performance to end spring training. I'm very interested to see how he does the first half of the season, because that's a guy that can kind of get that, become that flip situation that we saw when Fetty was first here. But again, that's how I see the first weekend in Milwaukee going. Before we get to Miami, I'll let you guys break down, the Milwaukee series. We'll start with you, Treasy.
Sunday, I'll be there. So they got to win Sunday. I want to win Sunday. And at least they got Kay going against like a very heavy left-handed team. So like that matchup looks okay to me. So I'm going to go with at least a win on Sunday. It's tough for me to look at a team that just lost 100 games and go like they're going to come right out of the gates and win their first series. So I'll give them the one win. I'll take it on the that I'm there.
I like the optimism.
I'm not going to lie. You people make me sick to my stomach. Like, we're talking about once you get past the Brewers day one, the rest of the series, it's fucking a free-for-all. Like, now, the only reason we view the Brewers in the light that they are is because they could play a good brand of baseball. They don't have as much talent as the other division leaders across the land, right? But those are the type of games that the White Sox win. Let's go to battle. Will Venable, he isn't Pedro Grifol, to where these guys are prepared to play baseball. Like, I remember when we first started this shit, Pedro Grifol lied to us and said, we're prepared every night to kick your ass. He told me that. And he lied to me. We got our ass kicked. Instead, this is not Will Venable's team. I feel like, and you're not going to agree with me, but Mizorowski is the guy that we could get. Game one. Make him exhaust those pitches. If he's at 40 pitches through 2 1/3, we're winning. I guarantee you that. The Brewers bullpen with McGill and Abner at the back end, you don't want them throwing 20 pitches each. I think that's what's going to happen opening day. And I feel like the White Sox is still a game. If we beat Mizorowski, that's the best starting pitching stuff that they got to offer throughout the rest of the series. I love Kyle Harrison, right? I like Brandon Sproat as a new up-and-coming starter. But they don't throw the baseball as good as Mizorowski. And I think Mizorowski is a great way to start off the season. I got fucking Miguel Vargas. I got Colson Montgomery. Like, there's ways for the White Sox to get the lead now. Granted, they got Jackson Chourio. They got my MVP front runner. I'm not going to lie, Chorisi, I was on Twitter Spaces this afternoon going nuts. Bryce Terang is going to get MVP votes.
Oh, wow. Year. Okay.
He has all the talent in the world. Platinum glove, slugging second baseman. Now, granted, he strikes out a little bit more than most, but he could steal me a lot of bags, and he could slug. He could slug 440 in 162 game season. He could get MVP votes. He's better than Nico Horner. The Brewers got that in the arsenal, and I still think the White Sox could win that series. I'm talking about beating Mizorowski and spinning the block. What, Saturday, the next game? They spin the block Saturday, the next game, and we win a series on the road against the National League champ, National League division champs. That can happen. But it starts with Mizorowski, and that's our best chance. Game one. Out the gate. Out the chute.
I'd love a win tomorrow. That sounds great.
Oh, boy.
Now we're going to next week. Monday through Wednesday on the road.
Oh boy.
First matchup Monday's looking like Davis Martin versus Chris Paddock. I'm actually liking the White Sox here. in this matchup. Paddock did look, has looked good in the spring. He had a rough season.
Don't with, care.
Minnesota prior, but he's got a new home and it's not looking good to, for his first matchup. The Tuesday matchup is looking like my DFA candidate, Eric Fetty versus Jacob Junk. That's a tough, I think it's going to be a bullpen game, but because that's a bullpen game, I'm going to choose the Sox in that matchup on the road. And then to end the series, it's looking like Shane Smith is going up against Sandy Alcantara. I think the Sox take a 2-1 series, but they lose that last game versus Alcantara. Go ahead and take it away.
Yeah, versus Miami. I don't know that Miami can hit. Like, I'm just like, I have no idea what that team is in terms of how they're going to come out hitting, how some of these young guys that they have, like Owen Casey and Connor Norby, how they're going to perform. So I'm going to be optimistic and say we get to them early in the season and win 2 of 3. Even though I love the name Jansen Junk, that's just such a great pitcher's name, and he does have like he's like a kitchen sink guy too. So like it's kind of a fitting name, like. Yeah, it's like this is like the perfect name for a pitcher. I remember I think in one of our trade blogs, I was like, I'm trying to figure out how to trade for Jansen Junk because I just want this. I want that name. Like, it's just, it's wonderful. But yeah, I definitely think this is a series where the Sox could take 2 of 3. I'd love to see them get 2 of 3 on the road early in the season. It would give me a lot of hope in the team to see them do that. So I'm going to agree and say 2 of 3 out there.
For fantasy purposes, I want Marcy to go off. but that's it. That's it. I want to see a 500 record by opening day at home. Yes.
Can I just say this? Like, the first time I agreed with Gonzo in fantasy in almost 6 fucking months, he said he wants Jake Marcy to go off against the Sox. I kind of want that too, because I got a lot of shares in him in Dynasty. So thank you, Gonzo, for throwing me this alley-oop off the fucking backboard.
I got you.
Fucking Caleb's calling me right now. What am I supposed to tell him?
Tell him Twins last place.
I'll tell him after the show.
All right, everybody. That leads us up to our home opener series coming up next week. Next show is going to be on the first, actually right before we go to the home opener. Again, all of us are going to be at the home opener. So Teresi, I'm hoping that Jay and I and our other uncle Ray is going to be getting us there early so that we can be there for the tailgate. Hoping to see you there.
It's going to be nasty in Lot B, bro.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I'm letting you know right now. Like, get your chaperone ready.
But Teresi, thank you for coming on the show with us for your first appearance on the Blackout, and we hope to have you again soon.
Absolutely. Had a great time, guys. Thanks a lot.
Before we wrap this up, Teresi, I know we know who you are, but give us a little shout out of your content and what you guys got coming up.
Yeah, you can follow us everywhere at From the 108. And Thursday nights, we do our live show. So tomorrow night, we'll be live, 8 PM. The only Thursday we're not going to do coming up is opening day. We will be in no condition. We'll be in no condition to go live April 2nd. I could tell you that. So every other Thursday though, you can find us there.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Teresi. And again, our next guest next week is going to be Justin Velasco. Is going to be joining us, one of our show's fans, and he's going to be with us as we
get into. He was an attorney too.
He was. Yeah. And again, it's going to be his first appearance on the Blackout as well. So it's going to be a first for a lot of people coming up, and we're looking excited for it. And again, thank you everybody for tuning in on our episode with Teresi. Again, thank you for watching the Blackout.